Blog Talk Radio.
Africa, Himotle, Africa, Omkle, the beautiful African, Izuletu, Fasilarona, the land is ours, Tigurahina, Shangulashu. Africa, during this month of May, the month of the founding of the OAU, if you remember, 25 May 1963. We say, Africa, and repeat, say it again, that Africa has a duty and an obligation to establish the Pan-African Court. That will be Africa's Supreme Court, to come before, have precedence over and above the international, that is the ICC, International Criminal Court. How Africa has to date failed to establish the Pan-African Court, that is unbelievable, Africa. And why African countries one by one signed and ratified their individual membership to the ICC before discussing and deciding the matter as a group. And the biggest problem that we have in Africa is we lead by reacting. Africa leads by reacting. It is not proactive. And that the fundamental issue of putting your sovereignty, judicial sovereignty, to a foreign court. In fact, it was a non-governmental organization that was established after the apartheid regime fell. They didn't do it during apartheid because it would have consequences to people of their race and extraction. So after the downfall of apartheid, they did the International Criminal Court simply targeted at Africans and protecting themselves. As you say that, Africa, we guarantee the right, the fundamental rights of, and protect the rights of the individual Africa, not groups, including the minority groups. And other people operate on the basis of groups. So the question is, Africa, why did Africa not have the wisdom to establish our own Pan-African Court as a Supreme Court of the continent? Yes, indeed, the AU established African Court of Human and People's Rights to guarantee, uphold, and protect the individual of Africa and community rights. Excellent. However, Africa, you need the Pan-African Court as a Supreme Court of Africa, especially to deal with conflicts and differences between African states and communities, but fundamentally serve as the Supreme Court of the continent. And we call upon all African leaders from Africa and nations without exception, no exception, have the duty, serve the duty and obligation to sign and ratify both the African Court of Human and People's Rights and establishing the Pan-African Court. That is a must, Africa. That is a duty. That is an obligation. As you say, Africa, the continent cannot develop without protecting or guaranteeing the fundamental rights of Africa, the individual Africa, the individual African communities, and the individual, especially the traditional indigenous communities, those who are far flung in the rural, they have no protection. And their land, as we speak, is being invaded. Their resources, as we speak, are being invaded. And we have people walking around with metal detectors of other extractions from the East Asia, from the West. They just walk in people's lands and with metal extractions looking for metals. And guess what? They might have been given permission, or somebody put money in their pocket. They gave them that. They said, no, you can go and these people won't do anything to you. This is escalating, Africa, the violation of the people's rights, fundamental rights, and our sovereignty as a nation, as a people on the continent of Africa is being invaded, suppressed, violated openly, blatantly, because somebody wants some few dimes in his back pocket. in South Africa, of course, the name being Azania, the country's indigenous name, Azania. We have an example, Mafrika, as we say that the question is, in establishing the Pan-African Court and the Court of Human and the African Court of Human and People's Rights, how do you balance the, you uphold the public interest vis-a-vis the individual interests and rights? Because Mafrika, if we put, let's say, a leader has to appear for crimes against humanity or violating African crimes or doing something wrong, even corruption, he's got rights as an individual. And how do you balance his individual rights as more African, because he needs to be protected, and the right, the public interest, our collective rights as a community, as a nation, as a people? And as you say that, more Africa, in Azania, of course, which is called South Africa, there's currently an ongoing corruption case against the country's leader. And cases have been going on in terms of one, in terms of the him having to uphold uphold the constitution. And it was ruled by the constitutional court that he had failed. To a degree, he did. But the question is, Mafrika, in his case, what is in the public interest when the national prosecuting authority use the public money to appeal, for example, appeal a murder and corruption case against a police? Now, this police happened to be the one that made secret tapes, and these tapes were able to stop the corruption charges. The charges were dropped on the basis of those tapes, because those tapes revealed that the prosecuting authority, that is the two directors, the director for investigation and the prosecuting director, were talking on the phone. Somehow they were bugged. And it so happens that they were talking about when to indict, the date of indictment, not the merits of the case itself, but when to indict this person. And there were extraneous factors, because that was a time of electioneering, when I think presidency of the ANC was at stake. So that in itself was deemed to be inappropriate, abusing the process. But these were two officials within that have the mandate assigned to them within, if they were talking to a third party, let's say we're talking to a third party, that would be grossly wrong, but they were talking to themselves. And if sometimes you have to decide when to serve the indictment, you've got to weigh issues. There's issues like, for example, is the prospective accused or respondent available? Is he armed? Will that put people in danger, the surrounding people in danger within the environment and the neighbors? In terms of the political issue, when do you appear to be apolitical? Because you have to appear to be. You cannot serve a person. Let's say the Democratic Party is holding a convention to approve their nomination, even the Republican Party, let's say politics here, and you want to go and serve the aspirant nominee an indictment on that day before he appears on the stage, you can do that. So the issue was, what is, if you discuss that in terms of the strategy, in terms of logistics, is that acceptable? But also, well, you know, there are prejudices, there are nuances, their, you know, preferences. And sometimes you say, well, I don't like this guy, I think we should. So that will be out. So to a greater extent, that was the problem. But now, Mafrika, the High Court decided, Mafrika, the High Court decided that, look, these charges against the president, the corruption charges, should be upheld. Must be upheld, and the prosecuting authority must go ahead with the charges of corruption against the president. But as we had asked Mafrika, we had his ally, Mafrika, that produced a tape that led to the dropping of the charges, all corruption charges. And the question is, how could the public prosecutor use the public money to go and defend a police officer that was faced with murder and corrupting charges? How do you do that? And the appeal was thrown out. And to some extent, the prosecutor, in fact, was charged to have perjured herself, which is an outstanding case, but somehow it has been pushed under the rug. Now, with the president, the issue of the corruption charges, the question is the public prosecutor, the High Court said reinstate the corruption charges against the president. And the question is, what is in the public interest that the national prosecutor is appealing the Supreme Court judgment to reinstate the corruption charges against the president? And now he's using public money. Again, the president himself has had the option, because he's an individual. He has the right to go and appeal. So you have the public prosecutor saying, no, I will not. In fact, I'm challenging the dropping of the charges. And the president, on his own right, goes and appeal the High Court decision. Both of them are using public money. Both of them are using public money. So the question is, where do you draw the line? Whose interest does the national prosecutor represent first? Whose interest comes first? The public interest or the individual interest? In Africa, as we pointed again, that the president as an individual has right to appeal, Africa, whether he's individual or as president. He's got rights. You give him that. So we go on the issue of the grounds of appeal. The prosecuting authority is saying that, no. The court cannot rule over us. We have the prosecutorial discretion to file or not file any case that we wish to do so in court. And referring back to the former head of prosecution in deciding to drop the corruption charges, he mentioned certain reasons, my friend, I quote, any timing of the charging of an accused person, which is not aimed at serving a legitimate purpose, is improper, irregular, and an abuse of process. It is not so much the prosecution itself that is tainted, but the legal process. Now, repeat, my friend, it is not so much the prosecution itself that is tainted, but the legal process. Now, the case itself was solid, my friend, substantive. It was solid. The merits of the case stood on their own. It is the discussion that these officers had amongst themselves that became the basis for dropping the charges. And the appeals court has rejected that. They said, you can't use an extraneous process that has nothing to do with the fundamentals of the case, the merits of the case, to drop the charges. So that is what is at stake now. And that's what the prosecuting authority is appealing, that we have the right to drop the charges on extraneous abuse of the legal process, not the case itself. Now, the question again is, what is the public interest in this matter? What is the public interest? Whose interests come first? Because the people are watching and say, hey, man, our president is facing corruption charges. Now, here's the prosecutor who's supposed to be part of the public. And there's an issue of the separation of powers, because the prosecuting authority, the judicial, is separate from the executive. And somehow, the prosecuting, he mentioned that in his present, but he mixed that up. I don't know how did that come, because we know that is a given. The only separation of power is, can he drop the charges even when the court says, you can drop those charges? Who has the last word? So according to his contentions, that the prosecution authority has absolute power to drop filing a criminal charges, especially on the basis on the basis of abuse of internal processes, no matter if the case has merit, is substantive, and itself not corrupted. So, in Africa, the public interest may be screwed, but you also have to look at the rights of the individual must be upheld, including the rights to appeal again and again. That is a given, Africa. And the question is now, if you want to appeal again and again, that do we have a limit? We can say, okay, we pay you up to $10. Beyond $10, if you want to appeal, you pay yourself. So the question is, my Africa, in the case of the president and the public officials, is the public obligated to pay appeals over and over again to no end and to no limit? What is the limit? And that's why we mentioned in our last program that, look, we call to Parliament to establish a judicial ad hoc committee aided by legal experts to probe judicial organs and public officials' abuse of public money, using it for frivolous litigations and appeals after appeals to subvert and frustrate the law. In Africa, that is fundamental, because what we have, if you have a weak parliament, and parliament is not in a position at all to have oversight of the executive and impose its will, because we say that we have the people's parliament. But in this case, Africa, you have too much concentration of power in the executive. And as we say, Murphy, concentration of the president's power of appointment is one major root for misuse, abuse of government, and simply undermines government by and for the people. We are repeating this, Murphy, just for emphasis. Unfettered, that is, limitless, too much power concentration of the president's power of appointment is a recipe to corruption, undermine good governance, and it is a consequence. It festers. One of the major consequences is that it festers things like a golden handshake regime and things like Gupta Republic, capture state. It infests control, kickbacks, shakedowns, you name it, Africa, of the public money. So there has to be checks and balances. To a point, Africa, you have to, as we say, insist, you got to reinforce people's parliament. So people's parliament becomes the eyes and the ears. And the policemen for the public interest. I mean, grantedly, the president appoints all judges, the executive appoints all judges on advice of the Judicial Service Commission and acting judges in consultation with the Chief Justice. So far, the courts have proven, have stood up, because one thing that we point out is that they're independent. The judiciary is independent. They get their jobs independent of anybody. And once they get the jobs, they have tenure. They're protected. And we repeat again, Africa, for the sake of sanity and for the sake of good governance, that you got to have parliament. Parliament has to protect parliamentarians, to uphold the constitution and to uphold the oath, their oath, and give them job security. If they vote to uphold the constitution, they are protected. So we say that, Africa, yes, the president might have the power to appoint the chief justice, deputy chief justice, and court judges and what, but at least parliament, at the minimum, parliament alone must vote to approve or deny the appointments. Now, as you say, Africa, again, we repeat, we take what's good from the East, we take what's good from the West. And Africa is in shambles. With all the resources that are there, they've been stolen. And brethren here were pointing out that at least they spend about $1 trillion a year, which of course could be conserved, saved, and used for development, targeted for development of Africa. Africa loses much more than that. We don't even know. It might be 30 trillion, 50 trillion. We don't know. We don't know. From the Cape to Cairo, Madagascar to Morocco. Imagine the diamonds. They've been taking it since the early 1860s. The gold that's left, the diamond that's left, the platinum that's left. And now they are digging 24 hours. And we don't account, Africa. We've had the oil boom in East Africa, West Africa, Nigeria, in Angola. Angola has had to go and ask the IMF to borrow the money because the economy tanked up. So the question is, Africa, how soon and how urgent can Africa see the fundamentals of having us individual Africa participate in the construction, design, and development of our continent? We don't participate, even some of us who have been in the liberation struggle. Many of us don't participate, and the African Union in particular talks about Africa moving forward. They are locking their people out. And you have the greatest number of educated Africans in this country. They don't participate. They don't want to touch it because their rights and fundamental rights are not respected. But it is not up to the governments or the leaders or the countries themselves to do it. It's us, Africa. We need to stand up. We need to stand up. So heads of public oversight institutions, public protected, auditor general, members of the South African Human Rights Commission for Gender Equality and Electoral Commission, they also are selected by the president. But we say in Africa, they must be voted and appointed by the president alone. In fact, we've got to do the reverse. Instead of sending three candidates to the president, no, let him vet them out, his candidate, and send them to parliament, to us, so that we vet the one that we need, not the other way around. Then we can reject, have the option to say in the parliament, and say, no, we don't want this. This person is unqualified. We don't want that. Or this person is a party apparatchik. Because we've had the public protector in the past that was so biased, unbelievably. So it goes on to say that the president may remove members of the Chapter 9 bodies on specific grounds only by vote of parliament. As we say, he can remove members of the Chapter 9 bodies on specific grounds only by vote of parliament, committee, or national assembly. It has to be done that way. But we need the people's parliament and remove this party parliament, moribund hegemonic party parliament. Now, I saw in one of the parliament's debates, one of the MPs, elderly, she was sleeping, and they tried to wake her up. No, she couldn't wake up, she was sleeping. And one of the opposition members said, no, man, do you guys know what the retirement age is? I mean, to you, there's no retirement. Go home, man. Go home. You are in advanced age. Give the young people or give somebody else an opportunity to participate, not hang on to this thing. So it's a situation where you have a kleptocratic nepotism. It's nepotism. They appoint one another. They can say, and then the older you get, the more wisdom you get, and the more maybe strikes or stripes you get to stay on. So, Africa, we say that no. Parliament has to have the right, and the people, the parliamentarians must be elected directly by the people. And it goes on to say that the executive appoints the governor of the Reserve Bank and members of the Finance and Financial Committees. The government, of course, the governor, of course, has to be vetted, approved, and voted by parliament, committee, and assembly. And we are not copying for other folks from Africa. We say that take what works. Take what works because we're in trouble. We're in trouble, Africa. Serious trouble. Now, there are other positions, like, for example, the head of defense force, the head of police, head of intelligence. Again, Africa, parliament should retain oversight to call and interrogate these chiefs. It's very, very important. And we've had boards of public entities like SABC, South African Broadcasting Corporation, the Revenue Service, and other public entities. But now with South African Broadcast Corporation, like we've had COO, whose integrity and qualifications have been questioned. The matter had to go to court. It's been going to court over and over again because he overpaid himself. But he comes out and say that the national broadcast will not show any more protests and uprisings in community. Hide that. Hide that at your own peril. Just hide it. Like, for example, you had a situation, I mean, Boyani, a tragic situation where the people rose up and banned 25 schools, which is a tragedy. It's horrendous, unacceptable. However, if you go into an area, you tell the chiefs, traditional chiefs, and say, look, we are going to move your municipal boundary. We are going to force you to subscribe or fall under another municipal boundary of another tribal affiliation. First, Mafrika, the traditional chiefs, they have sovereignty. These kingdoms have been there. These chieftainships have been here for ages. And there's always has been harmony. And most of them resisted apartheid and colonial occupation. You go there and enforce yourself that, look, you're going to do this. The chiefs asked you, said, no, don't do this to us. But you went ahead and did it. The community said, don't do it to us. But you went ahead and did it. And even the police, Maverick, the question is, if you have 25 schools banned, where was intelligence? How could you couldn't pick that up? And why didn't you go to the president and say, look, Mr. President, there's a problem here. Because intelligence has to deal with politics as well. There's a problem. People are getting angry and they volatile. And you got to deal with this issue of representation and participation. Not impose decisions by a bureaucracy, unappointed, unelected bureaucrats from the executive. And also the question is, how do you appoint a municipal demarcation board from the executive and it does not involve community people? It's now that you're talking to the chiefs, you're talking to communities, because the damage has been done. And if that is the way people have to do it to call your attention, Mafika, that is not governance. That's why we are saying that you are governing in reverse. And what's happening in Azania, South Africa, is symbolic of Africa. There's nothing there for the people. Nothing. Nothing happening for the people. And the people have to stand up, but in a positive way where we have to call our leaders by the jacket and say, no, Mafrika, sit down. We need this, we need that, we need that. And it's the same, Mafrika, the International Criminal Court. Some of them joined it because they wanted to get their opponents arrested. I guess so, Mafrika, I may be wrong. But that is the attitude in Africa, Mafrika. So the fundamental rights of people, the people's rights, people's human rights, come first. You can put up buildings, as we say. You can put up infrastructure. But without fundamental rights, that's going to be like putting up straw. And the people would put matches to it. They will burn it down. They will burn it down. And that's what Africa is heading to, because we cannot have it. We cannot be destitute no more. And we are calling upon all Africans from Africa for unity, but also for the rights of the individual and collective from Africa. Izoletu, Fasilarona, Shangulasho, thanks for the privilege of calling, speaking to you, and thanks for the privilege of listening. Thank you.